This is the Brave Leader Podcast, and I am your host, David McQueen, international speaker and executive coach. Join me each week as I share insights and interview a range of fabulous leaders on what inclusive leadership looks like for them. There are no silver bullets here, just honest and direct conversations on how leadership shows up, the good and the bad. My guest today is Louisa Clark, Managing Director of Operations for the Churchill Group. Prior to working for Churchill, Louisa spent 10 years in the Royal Air Force as a movement controller. And while serving, she was awarded the Commander-in-Chief's Commendation in 2004 for outstanding professionalism, sterling efforts, and devotion to duty. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Absolutely fabulous to have you on the podcast today, Louisa. And my first question, which I always ask people, is what did you have for breakfast?
Do you know, I can't believe we're thinking about breakfast at 10 past two on a Friday. But yes, this morning's breakfast was that love it or hate it thing of choice, which was Marmite.
Oh my God.
In this house, we absolutely love Marmite. We go through jars and jars and jars of it.
Wow. It is an acquired taste, right? Because
It is. I don't think me and my husband could actually be together if we didn't actually like Marmite.
Oh my goodness, so. Yes. The deal breaker. I love that.
Yeah, we actually, to be fair, you know, years ago, we used to, oh, it's really sad now because thinking about it, we haven't got them anymore, but we actually went through a period of collecting Marmite jars. And we had, I think we had everyone that was released.
I think I know a few people that have done that. And I just, like, as I said, I'd admire you from afar, but you go with it. I'll admire you. That's fantastic. I suppose that speaks to leadership, right? Not everybody will have the same taste. Not everybody will have the same approach. But when we're in there, right, that's what we do. So fantastic. I'd love to know how you got started in your leadership journey.
Oh, well, okay. So I started really from an early age for me. So I was about 13. And I would say, I would be really honest with people and say, you know, school was one of those, you know, those things that those places you go to. And again, it's a bit like Marmite, you either love it or hate it. And I guess I did. I went to school, but I didn't love it. But I knew that I wanted to be a part of something. So around the age of 13, I actually met a pilot. I think he lived at the bottom of our road, unbeknown to me. But he was like, you know, have you ever thought of the Air Training Corps? You might like that. And I didn't have, at that point, I didn't have anybody who I was related to who was in the military. So I didn't have any connections. But I thought, you know, this sounds quite good. The Air Training Corps is a uniformed place with people, like a youth club, if you like, where people go. And so I think, I was 13, and I asked my mother to take me to the local cadet force and sort of drop me off and see, you know, and I walked through the door, and it was a really scary moment because I really remember it, because there was lots of people mulling about and I didn't know any of them. It wasn't like I'd gone with a friend or any of that stuff. And I walked through the door, and at the age of 13, I thought, yep, this is where I want to be. I really like the look of this. And I joined up, and I got my uniform, and I learned to work as a team. And you know, from that age of 13 to 16, when I was in the cadets, I learned all about discipline, teamwork, comradeship, what it's like to have somebody's back, you know, what it's like to actually sort of learn to march and tie your shoelaces and iron and all those things. And I think really that's where I developed my love for the Air Force. So I left school, went to college, but at the age of 18, I then decided I was going to sign on the dotted line, and I joined the Royal Air Force at 18.
Wow. That's powerful. Yeah. To be able to know that from quite a young age as well, if it's made that impression on you. And again, you say that the discipline around the leadership and what you're going to do, that's actually really powerful. I love that.
I think it was about belonging as well, if I'm honest, because I think, you know, if you don't really get on too well at school, and, you know, people have different experiences in their home lives as well. But I think what cadets gave for me, and I would recommend that sort of youth club type, cadet type organisation to anybody of that age, because it gives you a sense of belonging.
Yes, definitely. And I love that, because again, as you said, if it's not working well in one place, being able to find somewhere where you can, I think that's absolutely, absolutely important. Okay, so would I be right to assume, let me ask the question, Would you say that that pilot was one of your leadership role models, or the leadership role model that you had that really kicked you off? Was that pilot one of the models?
I think that was the idea. I think the pilot that I met gave me the idea, and I suppose you could say leadership model, because he gave me the self-belief that actually, Louisa, at that age, 13, of course you can go and be a cadet. Of course you can go and join the Air Force and things. So I guess, yeah, I suppose you could say he was the first person that had said to me, absolutely, get off your ass, Louisa, go and do that. And I'd listened. So maybe... I've never thought of it like that, but maybe he was.
So do you have any currently that you would actually have as your as a specific role model, with young, old, same age?
I've got a lot. I'd like to talk, because I did I've thought about this in terms of who stands out to me as a leadership model. And I do remember when I first joined the Air Force at the ripe old age of 18, there was the gentleman there, a flight sergeant called Mo Mahindra, and I remember it was his shift that I joined very early days at Bryce Norton, and I look back at him now and think, what a great guy. I mean, I joined up with a lack of maturity. those teenage years, 18, 19, can be quite difficult, to say the least. And more for me, ran a tight ship, you know, one that oozed teamwork, comradeship, good, honest work ethic. But he had the ability to tailor his approach accordingly depending on who he was dealing with. You know, he understood what the sort of 18, 19 year old person needed, and what maybe the old, because when you're in the military you're surrounded by people of all ages, he understood what the older members of the team or more mature members of the team needed as well, and he was easily able to make us all feel cared for.
Yes.
So for me, Mo Mahindra was probably the one role model that sticks out, the one that taught me to tailor my approach, not one size fits all, and to try and listen to people, to what their needs are, rather than just going, you know, it's like this.
Mm.
So I've got a lot of respect for him. I actually don't think he's around anymore, but he did a fantastic job.
Yes.
During those days.
Oh, I love that. I love that. It's amazing how, when I do have conversations with individuals, how the impact of a real good or standout leader can impact you long after you actually realize it. And again, you know, the one of the things that came out from, you know, what you said was being able to tailor it, absolutely tailor it. And would it be fair to say that some of that has actually lent into your kind of leadership as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So I know that every one of my team is completely different. You know, some people need more time, some people need less, some people need a bit more of a lending a shoulder, some people need a bit more support, others need just the ability to ask you for you to ask them the questions that will help them solutionize themselves. But every member of your team requires something different, and it's about that. For me, it's about that deep listening, isn't it? That deep interest that you take with them to find out what that member of your team requires.
Yes.
For me, you know, it's about building that rapport and tailoring an approach accordingly.
Okay. I love that. I love that rapport. Rapport is a word that came up from one of my favorite leaders as well, actually ended up as a mentor. He said rapport is absolutely key to make sure that leadership you have is effective and long lasting as well.
Yeah, you know, people, when we talk about what, you know, great leaders and stuff, and we all know, I personally know that people don't always work for money. They don't just work for money, do they?
Yeah.
They don't. And as well, although the money aspect of work is great, actually what keeps people is that it's that rapport, it's the being listened to, it's the being cared about, it's the other level. Yeah. The idea that they want to work with somebody because there's a greater reason, the value, or when you're building teams as well. I think when teams come together, they are, when they've got something that they all buy into, the effort is different.
Yes,
the effort that they want to put is different, because they all collectively want to make the job a good job. They want to do best by you and the rest of the team as well, and that's not something that it doesn't come easy. If you're not a great leader, then you don't build teams like that in that way.
Yeah,
I'm sitting and thinking on this because it's just really soaking into me. I'm thinking, I need to take you along to some of my coaching sessions so people can hear this from you. Obviously, that's the whole point of this podcast, right? So people can get an insight.
I thought long and hard about this podcast and what to say and what not to say, etc. But actually, when you start to speak naturally, that's the best way, isn't it? And ultimately, when I look at my career, I've been as successful as I have been because I've built relationships with people, because they generally have wanted to do a great job because they've bought into the values and the idea that if we all collectively do a great job, we're all going to benefit from that. And that's why I believe that people stay with people.
Definitely. So I guess in a way, this evolves into my next question. I'm going to split it into two, actually. I'm going to tease you a bit if I can. So the way I'm going to split it into two is I'm going to ask you, what does good leadership look like for you? And then once you've explained that, and by the way, you can combine the answers if you want to, you're the boss. But what does good leadership look like for you? And alternative, what does good leadership not look like? Or what does bad leadership look like?
Yeah. So good leadership for me looks like good leadership is the type of leadership where you're empowering people to make their decisions and to go on their own journey. But you are there as that strength, if you like, in the background, helping them to move along on their journey, but knowing that there's somebody in the background who's going to support them and going to give them tough love if needs be, or a bit of advice when it's necessary, and they're going to help them with their own solutionizing, but not necessarily give them the answer. So I think that and for me as well, it's about watching you and your team grow into what the very best that they can be. It's succession planning, isn't it? It's all of those things that when I look at the people that work for me, I'm never prouder than when they get that next step, when they achieve that long-term goal or even the short-term goals, when they've reached their goals, when they get that next promotion and effectively they step into my shoes. Because it's never about empire building, it's always about what the very best that a person could do. And even if that means they're better than me, that's absolutely fine, and that's exactly what we should be as a great leader. That's what we should be looking for. And so the opposite to that for poor leadership in my mind is that micromanagement, that dictatorship type leadership, the one where people can't breathe, they can't think, and they can't be themselves. So that kind of, and funnily enough, because I come from a disciplined environment as well, the military, it's quite the opposite, isn't it? You know, to find that I like discipline, but I prefer the kind of leadership that allows people to breathe and think for themselves.
I was going to say to you, it's actually quite refreshing is not the word, but I'm going to just say different to hear that, given that there is a military background where the expectations and conversations I've had with people is that it's very strict. But you make a really good point, and I'd love to kind of like just dig a bit deeper into that. So when I think of the word discipline and the root word that it has in Greek is the same as disciple, and the core bit of this is to lead by example. And you said something which I thought was amazing. You said you're not into empire building. You just want to be able to bring and nurture that succession and nurture that talent. What happens if you have created that excellent talent and then that person does want to go, but you don't want to let them go? What actually happens? How do you actually reconcile that?
Well, I can't get rid of my team, so I'm not sure I can answer that question. I've tried, but no, absolutely not. Listen, their success is my success. So and vice versa. So you have to be prepared that when people have reached their short-term goals, their long-term goals might not be with you, they might be somewhere else. And you know, in my opinion, it's about supporting them with whatever is next. It's not about holding people back. Certainly wouldn't be the right thing to do to hold somebody back on their next leg of the journey just because you didn't want them to progress. So that wouldn't be my style. So certainly as well, I'm not at all afraid of the idea that one day I don't want to be the I don't want to be the only managing director of operations, and if that means that one of my team step up and become, you know, they step into my role, then absolutely there'll be another role for me to think about as well elsewhere or in a different part of the business to allow them to grow, because nothing ever stays the same forever, does it?
Obviously, this is coming out on audio, so no one will see it in video, but I'm smiling ear to ear here, because I'm one of the things that really strikes me here is there's a real sense of confidence that you have in not only your ability to lead and step out of the way where necessary, but also not to be threatened by individuals who you, again, as you said, they may do a certain job better. What your role is as the MD is to corral that kind of energy. And I'm quite curious as to where that kind of confidence has developed from. Is it something that you learned? Is it something that was innate? Something that was coached or mentored in you? Where did you get that confidence?
I really don't know. I left the Air Force under some quite extreme circumstances after 10 years, and I didn't have a great deal of support when I left, but I did have a resolute attitude in terms of what and how I should progress, and I was quite confident in myself in the idea that I was only going to achieve in life what I put into it. And nobody was going to achieve that for me other than me. So when I left, once I was ready, and I would say there was a period of time, because I did have a bit of a difficult time when I left, but there was a period of time when I'd got my strength back up, and I was like, you know what, you are going to make the best of this. This is your chance to be what you want to be. And I went ahead and sort of went on my next career. I took my next career path with the attitude of, you've had a great 10-year career, I received a commendation in 2004 for the CNC's commendation, and I was promoted and all those things, and I was like, I'm not going to let that go to waste. I'm going to progress in the next chapter with some confidence around my ability. I've done it before, I can do it again. So I kind of went into the first job role that I took. I was a station manager at Drumtees Valley Airport. And I have to say, I probably didn't do the greatest job because it was my first step into a civilian role as well. But I did have the determination that, you know, I was going to succeed. But I think there is, when you leave the military, there is an element in the beginning of the discipline is different, and the way that you, HR processes are different, etc. But certainly I had that confidence. And from then I learned a new trade, which is clearly in the facilities management industry, which is where I work. And I had this fight inside me that I was going to achieve the most that I could achieve. I joined Churchill Group in 2011 as an account, actually as a contracts manager. And it's 11 years that I've been with them, and I've undertaken every role going from a contracts manager up to being the first regional director, lady regional director, the first lady operations director, and the first female managing director of operations. And every step of the way, I have had that moment where I've thought, I can't do this, but then I've had this moment of, no, you can do this. And what's really interesting is not really understanding where the glass ceiling is. So I've never really said to myself, right, when I get to this level, that's it. I thought maybe I can't go any further in my mind first of all, but then I thought, well you can. And it's just that little voice in my head that's just kept going with, there is no glass ceiling, just keep going, see where you get to. I hope that answers the question, but it's all from me really. It's the fire inside me that's basically said, you're only going to get what you get if you go for it and do it yourself. Nobody comes along and makes things happen for you. You make them happen for yourself.
Yes, and it's. I think what I wanted to unpick from that, and what jumped out at me was having that real sense of drive. And I'm a real believer that there has to be a sense of self-confidence and self-efficacy in order for you to be able to do that job. When I talk to a lot of clients about imposter syndrome, for example, when they're there and they're like, oh my God, am I good enough to be here? I always say, go and have a look at the evidence behind you that shows you that you deserve to be here. I get them to write something down. I deserve to be here. I always get them to write them down and stick it on a post-it note or what have you. But I love what you said about having to, you have to find that stuff for yourself, because it's only finding that stuff for yourself that other people can bring out and support. The, you know, you obviously have the system around you to support it as well, but being able to find that individual, I love that.
I won't shy away from saying, though, imposter syndrome, whilst I've had the confidence inside me to push me to the next level, that doesn't at all take away from the idea that imposter syndrome exists. You know, I've quite often stood there and thought to myself, am I really the person to be chatting about this subject? Am I the one that knows about this? And then somebody once told me, you don't have to be an authority on something. You just need to be knowledgeable about it. And actually, as long as you're knowledgeable about it, then your contribution is valued.
Yes.
And that made me think about things slightly differently.
Yeah. Knowing enough rather than having to be the ultimate expert.
Because I feel like with that imposter syndrome piece as well, people do feel like, well, what qualifies me for that?
Mm-hmm.
What is, you know, I haven't got a degree in whatever it is. So maybe I shouldn't be the person stood here talking about it or delivering it or carrying out that role. But actually, it's just about having the knowledge.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. No, definitely. So I guess the, and I could sit here and talk for you for the whole, by the way, I swear to God, I have to have a conversation with you after this podcast, because I just found this fascinating. But I'm really curious as do you have examples of really tough decisions, or at least one tough decision that you've had to make as a leader?
I think we all have tough decisions to make as leaders all of the time. You know, is that person the right person in the job? Is that the right role for them? Are you doing the right job? Do you have to question yourself? Is that client the right client for you, et cetera, et cetera. But for me, in terms of my personal leadership decision, I was doing extremely well on my journey in the Air Force. I think I was in my 10th year. I'd signed on for longer. I was prepared to be a lifer, and some things happened that we won't necessarily talk about today, but I had to take a really big decision, and it was to leave my Air Force role and to start again. And for me, that was the biggest leadership decision, because I have no doubt in my mind, if I'd stayed in the Air Force, I would have reached a higher rank. And I would have kept going without that glass ceiling and got to wherever I was able to achieve, but I didn't, and I left. And so for me, the biggest leadership decision I've had to make was whether I continued with that or left and started again. So for me, That's that.
And again, with respecting the boundaries on not going to the details, what do you think the key lessons that you learned from that were?
From me now, I think if I could go back, and it's many years ago since I left, so I left in 2005, but the mature in me would have handled the things very, very differently.
Okay.
And I wouldn't have accepted some of the unacceptables. And I always say to people today, don't accept the unacceptable, question everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Love that, love that. That's what I say to my daughters. Don't be afraid to ask the questions, question it all, definitely.
Yeah, question it all. And even if the answer you get isn't the answer you want, at least you've got the answers. You know, I left with lots of questions and lots of parts of me that think, you know, maybe if I'd have questioned that more and I've actually not accepted what somebody I thought was in a position of authority, I accepted their reasons behind some things that maybe I wouldn't have done today.
Yeah.
But that comes with experience, doesn't it, as well?
Definitely. It's like when people say to me, you know, David, what would you go back and tell your 25-year-old self? And I say, just ignore what the 53-year-old self is telling you, and just what you've got to do. I'm going to just go slightly right with the question on this, if you don't mind. And so the big concept around Brave and the whole concept around the Brave Leader podcast is based on that acronym of Brave. And Brave stands for bold, resilient, agile, visionary, and ethical. And it's also about brave as a verb is courageous, as an adjective is about being able to take bold activity. And feel free not to answer this one if you don't want to, but have you ever had any challenges or any challenges or setbacks to your role as a leader based either on your gender or any other characteristic that you have that you probably wouldn't see happen to someone else?
This is a really interesting question. If I and this is it's quite a sensitive subject actually, because clearly being a woman at the table, you know, there aren't enough women, are there, in at board level? Yeah. And I was extremely proud and privileged, and also I worked damn hard to get my seat at the table. But if I tell you a story, and it's not one that I tell, people close to me know this story, but I suppose it's not one I normally tell. But, you know, when I was sort of traveling up the ranks, if you like, in my current role, I had this misconception or preconception that people would judge me based on my size, because I was, until about 3 years ago, I was 7 or 8 stone heavier than I am now. And I was incredibly underconfident because of that. And I felt that the way to tackle that would be to lose the weight, and people would feel differently about me, and I wouldn't necessarily sit in that room and be judged because of my size, but then actually for my ability. Now, whether that's something that I imagined, if you like, rather than was there, but it was something that certainly drove me, because I actually went through and had bariatric surgery. About 3 years ago, and clearly, you know, I'm very happy that I did that. I wouldn't ever go back and not do that. But I wonder whether the drivers for me were that sort of perception of me as that, you know, 17, 18 stone lady in the room wouldn't be taken seriously, because they were maybe visualizing on my weight rather than my ability. But as I said, you know, maybe some of that was in my head, as opposed to what was actually happening on with people. So,
well, as I said, this is all about being brave. So I really appreciate that, and honor you for being able to share that. And again, you know, when I'm talking to leaders, I don't think it's a right or wrong one, but our perception of how that is, and making people very aware of it. Because to your point, whilst you may not necessarily see that as something as primary, it might be something you're in your imagination. We know that there are individuals who are navigating that and who are not necessarily sure how to do that. And how do we show up as a leader? So I really honor you being able to share that honestly with me here.
So let me it's a really difficult one, because clearly I was being promoted and have been promoted for my abilities to do the job. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been promoted. But yet I still had this perception in my mind that people were going to judge me and not take me seriously. So, and I think that's about having a being honest with ourselves.
Yes. No, 100%. I'm this 50 plus dude who rocks into these boardrooms with skinny jeans and a pair of bright Converse Chuck trainers, all right? And I've been doing that for a number of years, but I remember the massive conversation I used to have in my head, like, will they take me seriously? You know, I don't have a degree. You know, I quit after a year. I went into this stuff and learned a lot of stuff along the line. I don't have a coaching qualification yet. I'm coaching senior leaders of multi-million pound companies. And there's all these kinds of conversations. And to be honest with you, at a base level, I'm even thinking about conversations where I'm going, oh my God, may there be a perception around me because of the color of my skin? And all these kind of conversations came to me. And I mean, I told you on my podcast that I swear, and I'm just like, you know what, fuck it. I'm going to go in there and I'm going to do what I've got to do. And I've got the results. I've got the evidence. I've worked with people, helped them to shift forward. I understand where they're going commercially, because I used to be an accountant and an IT. So I understand the commercial side, but I also understand the personal development side as well. And to your point, yeah, there is that notion. You're doing stuff and you're getting all these really, really great results. And then all of a sudden you're sitting and you're thinking,
It's the imposter syndrome again. It really is. It's that I'm not a professor or I don't have a degree in something, so surely I can't be the one that people want to listen to, and I'm not going to be the authority on it. Well, no, you're not an authority on it, but you are. You're good at what you do, and people are good at what they do, but they, like you've just described, you spend that time over-analyzing and questioning yourself. Yeah. And I wish you could do it less, because I think we'd all be more productive if we could just get out of our own heads a little bit and realize what other people see. I always find it interesting if you ask people to describe you as opposed to how you feel about you, and it's always not what you, it's not what, the way people see you isn't the way you see yourself.
Very different, very different. Very different.
It's
Go ahead.
I'm asking you questions.
No, this is good. Go for it. Come on, don't worry.
No, but it's that 360, you know, that the idea that you ask people to do that 360 on you and give you that feedback about yourself, and it never comes back in the way that I think it is going to. And pleasantly, when I've done it recently, it has come back with lots of positives. But yeah, you know, there's always that element of, well, I didn't see that in myself.
And I actually think it's a really good exercise when managed properly, right? So I also do, as well as feedback, I do feed forward, right? So what are the things that can really, feedback is what I've done in the past. Feed forward is what can I do going forward, and, you know, what you'd like to see. And again, that perception, you can be in a room in five different people and you can be in a room with five different people and come out of that room with six different opinions, including your own, right? So it is just being able to have a sense of that understanding, and I love that. And by the way, never apologize for asking me questions. I told you this is your zone. You come and you ask me the questions. So I'm going to move away. I've got three more questions that I'm going to ask you. And the first one of those is just for you. And we kind of touched on it before, but what does a succession plan look like for you? How inclusive do you make it so that whoever's going to be part and parcel of that, you know that they've done it based on merit and really objective thinking from your point?
So succession planning for me is really about the people around you. If you're in a leadership role, I'm leading my team, it's about them achieving what their goals are. I think we did touch on it earlier. It's around them, whatever their goal may be. And now succession for some people is different to others. So some people might want to be the next MD of operations, and somebody else might simply think that the next step up for them as a team leader is where they want to be. So succession planning is around supporting your team to achieve what it is that they can and have the ability to achieve, and not standing in the way of it. So making sure you have people passing, being able to step up into those roles and creating new roles for other people and passing that down, making sure that if you can create great leaders, can the people who you've created great leaders with create more good leaders, and can they create more good leaders? Because good leadership comes from good leadership.
Yeah. If you haven't thought about doing it, please write a book. If you haven't.
I don't know. I mean, I'm just getting used to talking.
Well, this one's easier, right? Because you could write it down. But no, I love that. That's one of the most... Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I've taken a really keen interest in coaching recently. And I am doing a foundation degree in coaching, because what I've realised is, I described this to a lady that I really love. I don't know if you know her, Liz Kentish.
I've heard of her.
She's lovely, and she's I met her at Workplace Futures, and we've kept in touch ever since. But I described coaching to her recently as a bit like being an artist without having any paintbrushes or paint, because I feel like I've always created that coaching culture and had that coaching kind of way about me, but I actually didn't have the tools, and I certainly didn't have the theory. And so now I'm grasping the tools and the theory. It's making me stronger in the coaching.
Yes.
Piece.
Yeah. No, it is brilliant. Just even the way you answered around succession shows me that there's that element to it. And there are so many. The beautiful thing about being a coach is that you've got this. I compare it to like being in a kitchen. All right. So, you know, you can get a piece of chicken in a kitchen, but it's how you wash it, how you season it, the flavors you add to it, you know, whether you're going to have it with rice or with pasta or what have you. It's still the piece of chicken, right? But how you pull down on those resources according to the meal that you're preparing in front of you when you're doing coaching, it's just like that. And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful experience. And I believe personally that what you were just saying just now around leaders creating leaders and having that sense of cascading, it's rather than telling people what to do. For me, I see a managerial role where people are like, right, I'm going to tell you what to do. This is what we need to do. This is the target we need to hit. I need you to be really clear about that. That's what we do when we're managing. When we're leading, we're guiding, we're coaching. We go, right, this is what you need to do, but I'm going to help you to improve on it. Or I'm going to tell you about the direction. We're going to build a vision. We're going to build a strategy, and they can work side by side. But for me, that coach, that leadership piece, I believe, is definitely about having that coaching ability for those who you are trying to build up as leaders themselves. Definitely.
I agree. Sorry. Yeah. Really important.
Definitely. So I want to come back to that 360 bit, actually, because this is quite interesting to my other question. So what would, and I know you've obviously done the 360 assessment, but what would those who you lead say you do well, and what would they say you can improve on?
Yeah, so I suppose when I've done the 360, I have done it not that long ago, because I asked them, bless them, to do it, and they were a bit horrified, if I'm honest, because they were like, no, we don't want to. And they were also too kind as well. And I would say that I even asked them to be honest about it, I know they all tick the boxes for some things that they probably thought that I'd like to read as opposed to what. And so it is about having that conversation with them, but being completely honest, because it's no, you know, you only learn by hearing those things or reading those things, as opposed to not what you, you know, don't just tell me what you think I need to know. But they, you know, I do sometimes know that I have a tendency to wander, and in terms of listening, so I listen at level one for I would say at least 60% of the time, because I'm just skimming over and not really paying attention, and I need to listen at that level four far more often, which is that, you know, that deeper listening in terms of what are they saying to me, what are you really saying to me. And sometimes I have a tendency to, like I say, they'll be talking to me and then I start butting in with something, it's got absolutely nothing to do with whatever they were saying to me, and then I walk away and think, oh yeah, you didn't. So there's that. They completely have recognized that I absolutely despise the idea of standing on a stage, and they will all tell, I think every single one of them were told me that Louisa is very underconfident when it comes to presenting or standing on a stage, and probably needs to deal with that.
Okay. No, that's cool.
But I think that's because I show vulnerability in that area as well. So I've probably handed that on a plate, if I'm honest. I'm quite vocal in saying that's not something I enjoy, even though I wish I did.
Yes, yeah. You don't have to enjoy it. We'll come back to that. That's a whole other coaching question altogether. So you told me the two things that you said that the feedback they would give you for improvement on, that was speaking in public and also the listening, but you didn't tell me the bits that you were really good at.
Oh gosh, I think I know leadership, clearly, in terms of pushing them along.
Yes.
Being somebody to look up to, and somebody they were proud to work with. This sounds like I'm just doing a diary, a list of all the good things about me, but I think lots of being a role model, I think, is what comes out, is that I wouldn't ask anybody to do, or I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't do any of that if I wasn't prepared to do it myself. I try not to get into all of the intrinsic minute detail of everything, but I am very much a part of every day with my senior team. We talk all of the time, and so I'm always that umbrella at the, just listening and helping them move things along and being a support mechanism for them, and I think that's what comes out.
Yes, yeah. Super. So interesting that you gave me the ones that they would say you can improve on first before you went to the ones with the lead. That was so interesting. Maybe accidental, but it was so interesting. And I'm going to say to you, I'm going to give you two things. I'm going to give you unsolicited advice that you never asked me for, but I'm going to give you anyway. The number one, I say this to leaders all the time, is don't be afraid to blow your trumpet if your trumpet's the only instrument you have.
Oh, all right. Okay. I always feel a degree, like just an element of, you know, it's almost like it's not the right thing to do to big yourself up, because I suppose that's the shy element, isn't it, and the slightly underconfident part that shines through when you don't want to be the person that people are talking about.
But if they've told you and that's your
instinct, I know
it is. And the second one I will say to you about the level one listening, that, and this is a little, just a bit of a coaching tip, it's just being able to write down when that person's speaking to you some of the stuff that they say, and then repeating it back to them. That stops you from wondering, because you have to put the attention down to listen to what it is they say and then reconfirm it back. But I know exactly what you mean, because I've had to learn and deal with that myself over a number of years. So let me finish.
It's quite hard, isn't it, the level four listening? And actually, when you wander away and you don't pay attention, it's incredibly then difficult to not beat yourself up about the fact that you didn't give them that person that attention.
Yes. Yeah. And it is a practice. It's like any habit. It's a muscle that we build. And that's why I was saying, you know, one of the quick wins for me is being able to write, consciously aware of, I need to write that down when that person's saying. It does two things. Number one, it reminds us of how we will stay present with the person who's in front of us. But it also signals to the person that we're looking at, right, they're actually listening to me and taking notes. As long as it doesn't go off into a doodle of a marigold or some kind of bee flying around the tree, absolutely fine. I'm fascinated by your journey. I've found it really, really intriguing. And I'm going to finish off on this last question now. And a lot of it is shaped, the way I'm going to ask this question, a lot of it is shaped from you moving from the military to Civvy Street, as you call it, right? Going into civilian roles. So would you say that the leadership you've had so far is shaped by the company that you work for, or is it something else?
You're absolutely correct. Like on the moving out of the military into civilian role, but certainly the company that I'm most passionate about is the one that I work for now, because in terms of leadership, they've allowed growth for leaders. They've really, the two gentlemen that own the business have been incredibly good at letting people grow and flourish and not being that kind of overpowering. We're not micromanagers. They empower people to do and to be the best that they can be. So in terms of leadership, they've allowed those people who maybe, you know, when I first joined 11 years ago, I was nothing compared to as strong, committed and confident as I am. Well, maybe I was, but I mean, I hadn't refined it as well as I have now.
Yes.
And I've only been able to do that through going along this journey and being given the freedom to grow into a leadership role.
And the tools, would you say that they gave you the tools as well in order to be able to develop that leadership role?
Yeah, absolutely. So they've because I'm quite keen on education and you're always learning. I've never felt an inability to be able to do that next course or to invest in that bit of training or to take that next step. So yes, absolutely.
Fantastic. I'm going to let you know, as we have ended here, Louisa, that your recommendation, I'm so glad that you were recommended to me. And I absolutely love that journey that you had. I love the confidence that you exude as a leader. And I love the fact that you will look at these options and think about, how do I make this more inclusive? How do I make this important for me in the way that I lead? And so thank you for being a guest on the Brave Leader podcast. And I hope we get the opportunity to cross paths and have another deeper conversation somewhere else, whether it's here or somewhere else again. So thank you very much. I really appreciate you joining
me. Thank you, David. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for tuning into the Brave Leader podcast. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends, families, and foes. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast from, and please feel free to rate it and leave a comment. Until next time, stay brave.